community members and different non-for-profit grassroots organizations and community action groups decided to come back to Barker Park, where there was a homeless encampment sweep, where police came and removed all of the benches and individuals from Barker Park, which is actually against CDC protocol. The homeless sweeps are supposed to be illegal. And following Barker Park, there were escalated situations of individuals who were physically harmed simply for asking for complaint forms at City Hall following this incident. And so right now, folks are at Barker Park filling in to put tables and chairs back in the area, provide music, food, community resources to the community, show that we are not going to allow the city or the state or any of law enforcement to close down an area that is so vital and crucial for people who have insecure housing, who are going without their needs being met right now, and just don't have anywhere else to go and are expected to be sent to the woods if not able to actually occupy and be present in these public locations during a pandemic when housing is not available. And so this action is really to show up and refill the space, and this is the people's space, and the people are here.
What do you say to community members who have raised issues with quality of life in the area? And I just want to specifically mention that, you know, there have been comments online about Barker Park, about discarded used syringes, about empty liquor bottles, and also about women feeling unsafe walking near Barker Park. What response do you have to community members who lodge those complaints?
I would say those complaints are very much rooted in NIMBYism, in the sense of not in my backyard type of attitude, when the reality is that if more resources are being put out to the community, and if life-saving services were not being cut and slashed across the board right now, people would not be all pushed to one area of the city. And that's exactly what happens when gentrification goes on in a city, when housing is not accessible. Law enforcement and other members of the community end up pushing individuals into one part of the city and then complaining that people are occupying that part of the city when that's the only place that they're allowed to really exist without interruption at times. And so even right now, in this one space that was considered a space that was accessible and comfortable for people to come stay in during the day, that really, if we had more resources available, if more community relationships were formed with the local syringe exchange providers to be able to provide Sharps containers within public restrooms nearby, it doesn't take a lot to set up, you know, observable bathroom that can double as somewhat of a mini overdose prevention center, as long as someone is nearby and able to knock 3 to 5 minutes and open the door from the outside. And when we really look at evidence-based research, we see that when those services are actually provided to the community, far less syringes are discarded in the community. If services are cut and people are unable to come through to do cleanups, and people are motivated to discard their syringes due to criminalization and fear of arrest, much, much more likely is that individual to toss that syringe somewhere rather than find the community kiosk.
Your organization, Vocal New York, has worked on these issues for a very long time. Do you have a relationship with the city of Troy such that the city could call on you to enhance services that might be being cut elsewhere?
We're in the beginning of forming stages of really forming our relationships with the city of Troy. We've historically had more relationships with Albany due to our chapter primarily being there, but especially in events that have transpired throughout the recent months and the uprising to fight for Black liberation across the country, we've really expanded our reach across the capital region to not just be limited to Albany. And so we are really looking to build upon our relationships with representatives in Troy so that we can look at different opportunities for syringe agreements to happen between shelters and individuals, because someone does not need to be in a shelter to interact with a case manager at a shelter. So if a shelter is over full, someone could still potentially go into that shelter, meet with the case manager. Case manager can identify their needs and potentially help them, link them with safe injection supplies, safer smoking kits, or anything else that they might need to protect themselves right now during this pandemic, where substance use due to isolation is at a high, high increase across the board.
The cuts in services has such a ripple effect on public health. Are you worried about future cuts given the state of both the city and the New York State budget?
Yes, absolutely. Right now, we have been staying in touch very much with different harm reduction agencies and social services across the capital region as well as across the state. And what different services are looking at right now is at least 20% cuts to their programming. Life-saving services needing to furlough up to 80% of their staff. There was no way for many of these organizations to prepare for a 20% cut to their staff and programming. And so it's a huge concern, and it's something that we're strongly trying to call upon Governor Cuomo and our state electeds to take action, that during a pandemic, while we're watching Hep C and HIV and overdose rates skyrocket, we cannot possibly stand for allowing 20% cuts across the board, from public education to harm reduction services to mental health care, while they continue to fund police at the same exact rate.
For many, many years, before government funding was ever even available, harm reduction organizations did a tremendous amount of work on shoestring budgets. And they did so because they understood that the impact on public health would pay dividends. And I'm wondering what you might say to public officials about how ensuring adequate funding for harm reduction can result in cost savings down the line.
Whether you are someone who blames people who use drugs and think that they deserve to be in the predicament that they're in, and you only care about the bottom dollar, even if you only care about the bottom dollar, what we can look at from years and years of amazing harm reduction work is that the cost of funding harm reduction programs and social services that benefit people who use drugs and are impacted by substance use is far, far more affordable for the taxpayer, for the government, for everyone, in comparison to what it would cost to pay for even a small number of individuals hepatitis C treatment or HIV treatment over a course of a lifetime on Medicaid, especially now with HIV medication being extremely effective and able to help people suppress their viral loads for a lifetime. That is a lot of Medicaid dollars that would go into one person's HIV treatment for a lifetime. And instead of doing that, there's so much that can be done to prevent more people from contracting it. And funding these programs is a far more affordable, far more humanitarian, far more evidence-based way to provide resources to the community. Around the time of 2016 was when fentanyl started to truly flood the drug supply, especially here in the capital region, and we started to see huge, huge skyrockets in overdose. Right now, we're seeing overdose rates reach that same exact level. So we're looking at 4 years of hard, hard work that's been put into the community, potentially being undone because of these cuts, because of hepatitis C and HIV and overdose rates likely to continue to rise if the state does not intervene and pay out these AIDS Institute contracts and make sure that providers have what they need to provide the people with what they need.
What's the mood like there at Barker Park?
The mood right now is it's peaceful. There's music playing. Some people are dancing. I think there's a general overwhelming feeling of a comfort and camaraderie and community right now of folks that have been able to come through and come get, you know, free clothing, food, water. There's folks, you know, chalking messages in the park, blowing bubbles. It's family friendly. And it really is a living proof and example that we can take care of one another. Humans have the ability to step in and provide resources for one another. And if we as community members can provide resources that our community needs, we sure as heck know that our elected officials have the capability to step in and do so at a systemic level.
Where can our listeners find out more information about Vocal and the services you can offer?
I recommend visiting www.vocal-ny.org, vocal-ny.org, or to check us out on Facebook at Vocal Albany Chapter.